Thank you. It is good to be with you again. I had dinner last night with John and Margaret Lira, and we had a chance to reminisce a bit about the journey of Village of Hope and realize that Highway Church has been with us almost from the very beginning. And we appreciate that so much. We don't take that for granted. But I think one of the successes of Village of Hope and its ministry to thousands of children in Africa has been the consistency of those that have partnered with us and have gone on this journey with us. Margaret asked me, you know, when you went and started this, did you have this vision for where it is today? And I just laughed. I said, no. In those days, I'm not sure we even had a vision beyond Kitwe. That's where we started. But it's been the faithfulness of partners like Highway Christian Fellowship that has made it possible for us to move beyond the village in Kitwe, and we are now in 5 different countries. We have 10 different locations. But back in those days, we started with about 43 children in a small 2-room schoolhouse, opened 1 children's home, and today we're touching almost 4,300 lives. And that's just God's faithfulness. That's not anything that we've done or that we dreamed about or that we've pushed for. And God's been very faithful, and he's been with us on this journey. And it's been an absolute privilege and an honor to serve God in this capacity, you know. And I turned 60 this year, and I get a lot of the questions come at me about retirement, and I keep wondering, what in the world is that? Don't make me retire. I don't want to retire. No doubt, you know, you can't continue to carry the heavy load, but we can continue to have a presence and an involvement in the many lives. I was thinking the other day, you know, in January is usually the time of year where the new kids come into the village. They come into the preschool class. They're 4 years old and they're just starting off. And I was thinking, those kids that came in this January, I'm going to be 74 when they graduate from high school. I thought, oh man, I'm going to be an old man. But you know what? I want to be there and I want to see them graduate. You know, I don't mind passing the baton on to others to carry it on, but my passion is for these kids, and I do hope that the Lord will allow me at the age of 74 to see these kids graduate and to be there and celebrate with them. We can go to the first slide. There you go, John. I was talking about my artistic endeavors. It's something I started a few years ago. I spent some time last year in the Sermon on the Mount, and as I was contemplating on the Beatitudes, when Jesus was delivering the Beatitudes, he had an audience of people that were primarily made up of the poor and the oppressed. So the Beatitudes really were geared for that group of people. And as I was contemplating about that, I thought, what if that crowd of people that day were children? What would the Beatitudes have been like? So I came up with what I call the child attitudes. My wife tried to correct my spelling. She said, attitude has 2 T's. I says, no, it's a play on words. It's the Beatitudes, child attitudes. So here's what I came up with. And we can just sort of go with each attitude through the slide. Blessed are the children, for they are made in the image of God. Blessed are the unborn children, for they are formed by God. Blessed are the newborn children, for they have received the breath of life. Blessed are the toddlers, for their praises are accepted by God. Blessed are the children, for the kingdom belongs to such as them. Blessed are the young, for they are used by God. Blessed are the orphans, for God is their father. Blessed are the vulnerable, for the Lord is their protector. Blessed are the children, for God came as one of them. So you see, God values children. And he doesn't value children because one day they're going to become adults. God values children because they are human beings. I tease our staff sometimes. I said, I have a different vision of the Garden of Eden and the creation of Adam and Eve after working with children all these years. You know, we always picture God created Adam and we see this man. What if God created Adam and it was just a little infant, a little baby, just rolling around in the grass of the Garden of Eden? What if Eve was just this little infant that was completely dependent on God in the garden to sustain them and to grow? And they think I'm just crazy, so they say that's. Unfortunately, in the world today, we don't do a very good job of protecting God's precious creation. I want to refer to a story, and at first you may think it's disconnected to the work we do, but you'll see where it goes. And it's found in Mark chapter 5, verses 1 to 20. I won't take the time to read it all. You can read it. But basically, Mark tells a story about the time that Jesus and the disciples went to the other side of the sea of Galilee. So here's a picture. I had the opportunity to visit Israel a couple of times. The second time I went, I took some of our village leadership. Some of you will recognize Evelyn there at the bow of the boat. And in that picture, we are heading to the other side. And this other side was an area that was populated by non-Jewish people. It was the region of the Decapolis, the place of the Gerasenes. Josephus, the great Jewish historian, wrote about this area, describing how the Romans had conquered the people of this area. The Romans were ruthless when they conquered places. They steamrolled their way through this area. And the Romans squashed any sign of resistance, killing anyone who would rise up to oppose their rule. And thousands in this area died at their hands. And most of the people that were killed were young men. And the Romans would take families captive. And they plundered villages and set fire to people's homes and destroyed their belongings. Children would have witnessed this brutality and this violence. And if you were unfortunate enough to survive it, this would have scarred you for life, seeing what the Romans would have done to your mother, to your father, to your aunt, and to your uncles. So this is the setting in which Jesus arrives. And immediately after arriving, we're told that he meets a demon-possessed man. This man would most likely have been quite young during the time of the Roman conquest, as the Romans came through and plundered and killed. This young man would have experienced some severe trauma from the brutality that he had observed. This would have left him very emotionally vulnerable, even to the point of demonic possession. And it's very interesting when Jesus asked the demons, what is your name? Who are you? And they said, we are Legion. A Roman name for a conquering force. There is a connection between our childhood trauma and our spiritual well-being. And I've seen this in many of the kids that we work with. So immediately after arriving, Jesus and his disciples met the man. The account of the condition of this man is very graphic. I don't think you'd want to turn that into a short video and show your children. Jesus commands the demons to come out, sends them into a herd of pigs, and they plunge their way down into the Sea of Galilee. And the next thing we find in the story is the man is sitting there, he's clothed, and he's in his right mind. Jesus and the disciples begin to prepare and leave the region to go back to the other side where they came from. And the man makes a request of Jesus and says, I want to come with you. He obviously interacted with the disciples and found out that they were learning things of God from Jesus. And he wanted to go with them. He wanted to become a disciple. And Jesus gives a very shocking reply. He did not permit him to come. He said, go to your home, to your people, and tell them all that the Lord has done for you, that he has had mercy on you. What? This guy wants to be a disciple. He wants to hang out with Jesus. He wants to learn. He wants to sit at his feet and feed from him. And Jesus says, no. Shouldn't this guy have gone to Bible college? Shouldn't he have gone to some library and studied the Torah? No. All this man needed was his story and how Jesus interfaced with that story. And that was enough, and he sends him. In chapter 7, verse 31, we read that sometime later, Jesus returns to the Decapolis. So that going back, as Pastor Ralph was saying, Jesus goes back, right? This time, instead of chasing Jesus away, saying, get lost, you're bad for our economy, my pigs have died. This time the people recognize him and they come running to him and they bring their deaf and their mute for healing. So obviously this man told his story. He did exactly what Jesus had asked him to do. Go tell your story. And the people listened to this man's story, and they believed. And after Jesus healed the deaf and mute man, he commanded the people not to speak of it, but they did not listen. No one could stop them from speaking of all that Jesus had done. And I think we've lost the art of telling our stories. You know, if we look back over our lives, we have great stories of what God has done in our lives. And we should be running around telling people these stories. Go to slide 12. Yeah. So as we were going to the other side, we had the privilege of touring these areas. The bus took us up through this really windy road and up to this area of the Gerasenes. And what they've discovered there is archaeologists have discovered a large number of ruins there that they believe would have been used as church gathering points in that region. And there are many of these ruins. And it's believed that this area was an area where the gospel really took firm rooting and spread throughout the area long after Jesus was crucified, buried, and rose again. And it all traces back to this one traumatized person who had an encounter with Jesus and who Jesus healed and said, "Go tell your story." It was really surreal to be there and to see the ruins of these little places and seeing that, you know, and possibly looking over the cliff and the hill where the pigs would have dove into the Sea of Galilee. You know, they can't pinpoint the precise places, obviously, but you get that sense that you're in an area where this could have, you know, and to be there and to experience it and to seeing what the obedience of this one man and how it flourished. We can go to the next slide. So children today, you know, they face many, many challenges around the world. Compassion International reports child abuse is a heartbreaking reality for many children living in poverty, and it comes in many forms: physical, sexual, spiritual, and emotional. Child abuse includes neglect, exploitation, and child labor. And we as Village of Hope interface with so many kids and young children that have experienced these events in their lives. So whatever the form, these facts about child abuse describe an urgent and growing need, Compassion says. Millions of children around the world are suffering and need someone to speak up on their behalf. And that's what we're there to do. We're there to speak up on behalf of those who don't have a voice. Go to slide 14 now. I would also add that many children today are facing the effects of war and violence. That's a graphic picture of the world in 2016. It probably hasn't changed much since then. But you can see, you know, Canada really is the only place that really is a high level of peace. Most of the world right now, from a child's perspective, is experiencing medium to very low environments of peace. They are seeing their families killed. They're seeing their homes destroyed. They're having to flee for safety, and we hear all about it in the news with the refugee situation around the world. They need someone to help them recover from the after effects of the abuse and trauma. The World Health Organization reports that globally in 2014, 1 billion children aged 2 to 17 years experienced physical, sexual, emotional, multiple types of violence. 1 billion. That's an outstanding number, considering there's 7 billion of us on the planet. So 1/7 of it. A quarter of all adults that were surveyed reported having been physically abused as children. And there's lots of us out there who've experienced those things. Oh, we hide it away. We don't show it. It's a traumatized world that is in desperate need of the message of God and His love and His grace and His mercy and His kindness. It's not a world that needs to hear about his judgment and his anger and his wrath. It's a world that needs to hear about his love and his mercy. So Jesus said to this man, go tell the people your story and tell them about the mercy of God. See, what I've done in your life. 1 in 5 women and 1 in 13 men report having been sexually abused as a child. I tell you, like, we just don't treat our children well. Every year, there are an estimated 41,000 homicide deaths in children under the ages of 15. Organization called End Violence Against Children reported that in 2014, children comprised 28% of detected trafficking victims. So these are young children that have been snatched away from their families and shipped off for whatever purpose. You can only imagine. The cost of violence against children is great. The United Nations reports that $7 trillion is lost due to violence against children each year, equivalent to 8% of the global GDP. I say that the cost to the individual child is far greater than that. You can't put a dollar value on the results that come out of trauma experienced by a child. And children struggle to make sense of what has happened to them and around them. When a child experiences a traumatic event, they respond with very strong emotions. And if they are not helped to process these emotions, they end up burying those emotions deep down and they carry them for life. And some of you know what I'm talking about. Many become passive and withdrawn and are not able to participate in normal childhood activities. And these are not just issues that we've experienced with children that we work with in Africa, but there are issues that children here in Canada are dealing with all the time. They are not able to live up to their potential, and I think that's probably the greatest damage that happens to a young child when they've experienced some form of trauma, is that potential of that life. Every life has got a potential. It's been capped. They lose touch with who they are and they begin to define themselves by what has happened. And the negative emotions they are experiencing are what they define themselves as. And the traumatic event now shapes the child's worldview. And most of them take on a victim mentality. Go to the next slide there. Yeah. If childhood trauma is not addressed, the child will carry the effects into their adulthood. And it impacts their relationships, their health, their education, careers, and overall emotional well-being. And we see that in the many communities that we work in. I think a lot of the economic issues that are faced in the developing world, I think a lot of it is, it goes beyond just policies and corruption and good governance. A lot of it is that there's people who carry this emotional baggage are not productive people. This man who Jesus encountered on the other side, he was not a productive citizen. So the many children that we work with come from this kind of background. They've lost their parents. Many go to live with extended family, but it's not because the extended family is welcoming them in. It's because that's the culture. That's what you do. So they end up living in environments where they're not wanted. They're not welcomed. Children today and have been abandoned. A study was done in Malawi where they're looking at the number of children that are living in institutional care. And they've been put there not because the mom and the dad have passed away and they're orphans. They call them poverty, economic orphans. The parents have just given up and just sent them somewhere because they can't afford to look after them. And many, many of the children that Village of Hope touches has experienced violence against them of one form or another. Many of them have been abused physically by their parents and step-parents. They may have been made to feel not as individuals who are loved, but they are made to feel like they are just a burden. They are a burden to the extended family. They are a burden to their community. They are a burden to their country. So you're battling this low self-esteem all the time. And if we don't intervene, we can go to the next slide. Oh, that's too bad. It's a picture of a young girl by the name of Fatuma. Some of you know her. These are her children. That's her husband standing next to her. It's too bad you can't see their faces. You know, when Fatuma came to us, she had to run away from her aunt and uncle's house because the uncle repeatedly tried to rape her at the age of 10 or 11. But you know, here God intervened. And here she is now. She's 30 years old. She's married. These are her children, her biological children. She's given birth to these three lovely kids. The oldest daughter there calls me Grandpa. And she has her story. And she has this tragic story of losing mom and dad and being sent to live with this aunt and uncle and to have this uncle chasing her. And she ran away. She spent, her story, you know, she spent the night in an outhouse to escape from him and then made her way to Village of Hope because she knew us and knew that that was a safe place. And she has this story to tell, this intersection with God. Next slide, we meet Mwaka. Mwaka will tell us her story, how one day, who she thought was her mother, was actually her aunt, and was told, no, 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 I'm not your mother. Your mother died when you were very young. And that just shook her world at a very young age to be told that you've never known your mother, your father. They died when you were very small. And as she grew up in this house, she became responsible for the household chores. And as she grew older, her uncle would beat her, leaving Mwaka with severe emotional scars. And then she came to Village of Hope. And she didn't smile like that when she first came to Chongwe. That smile is a God creation. That smile comes from the intersection of this traumatic story with the love and mercy of God. And she's one of the kids that I've been discipling over the last few years, and just seen tremendous growth and change in her. Next slide is Chanda, another girl. You'll see her just on the left side of Mwaka there. I mean, Chanda had to run away from her grandmother's house because she was hungry and there was no food in the house. So as a very young girl, she had to go looking for a place. And fortunately, Village of Hope was there to take her in and again to intersect this story, traumatic story, with the love of God. And you can see the smile on those girls' faces. And each one of those girls have a horrific story to tell. But you wouldn't know it looking at them today and seeing their smiles, lives that are filled with hope. go to the next slide. So this, you know, if I was to define the ministry of Village of Hope, it's really a ministry that focuses on creating an environment where children know that when they walk through the gate, that this is a place where they are valued, a place where they are cared for, a place where they are loved and protected. We help children become survivors of childhood trauma and not victims of it. And just as the Apostle Paul prayed in Romans 15:13, we pray the same thing, that the God of hope will fill their lives with all joy and peace in their believing, so that they may abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. And I have seen over the 20 years what hope does in a child's life. And it just, it changes their worldview. It changes this view of self that's one of a victim and of shame, of embarrassment, to one of, I want to be this, I want to do that, I want to go there. And of lives that are just looking to the future with great hope and anticipation, not with fear and trembling. So for us, it's very important that the children that we connect with get to meet this God that loves them, that has mercy and grace, that what God is not judging them based on what happened to them in the past. God is not judging them on what they did in their past, that God is accepting them for who they are today, and that they are valued by God. And when a child knows that they are valued by the Almighty Creator, the one who has made everything that we see around us, the view of themselves change. Hope changes a child's perspective on life. And we've seen that in hundreds and hundreds of kids' lives. So we do far more than educate. We do far more than feed and provide medical care. And we provide, yes, we provide shelter for those who have no place to live. But what we do is far deeper than that. We reignite the potential in these children's lives. We help them define themselves with a new reality, and it's a reality of belonging. Belonging to something bigger than the trauma that they experienced. The next slide is young man by the name of Joseph. At the age of 10, Joseph was living in a remote rural village just outside of Kitwe. He was living there with his sister and cousin, being cared for by a very elderly grandfather, extremely poor. Joseph came from a village with no electricity, no running water, no sanitation, and no education. And Nicholas and his cousin Joseph decided one day that they were going to leave the village and they were going to make their way to northern Zambia, where they heard about a relative who had a farm, and they thought that was going to be their best opportunity. And God brought Joseph, Nicholas, and Matilda to us just in time through a local pastor. Introduced us to the family, and the grandfather was happy to have the three of them come and live at the Village Open Kitwe. They moved to Kitwe, graduated from high school. Joseph graduated with honors, got a full scholarship to go to university in Kitwe, from the government of Zambia. This guy just impresses people wherever he goes. He's a gentle spirit, but his years at Village Hope Kitwe gave him a sense of confidence and of hope, and took on whatever challenge came his way, he took it on. While he was at university in Kitwe, there was an opportunity to learn Chinese. The Chinese have been investing a great deal in Zambia, and obviously they were offering the, you know, scholarships to young people, so language is an important part. So Joseph learned to speak Chinese. The Chinese had a competition amongst the students that were learning Chinese. Joseph won. They flew Joseph to Beijing, China, to receive his award. This kid comes from a little village with no electricity, nothing. Right? Now he's in Beijing. I've seen a picture of him standing on this massive stage with hundreds of people there receiving his award. While he was there, the local university came along and offered him a fully funded master's degree in international relations. And Joseph being Joseph says yes. Moves to Beijing, China. Lives in Beijing, China for 4 years. He said the first year was all language because the program was in Chinese. Graduates with a master's degree. And he said to me, he said, I got offered my pick. I could go anywhere in the world with any company. One of the companies was a large Chinese corporation that was working in Zambia. So he took that job. And now Joseph is back in Lusaka working for a large Chinese corporation. Works amongst Chinese. Speaks Chinese, writes Chinese. And he's their link. He's the link between the Chinese culture and the Zambian culture as they're trying to do business in Zambia. He's 27 years old. And he's already been identified as the one who will replace his boss, who's going back to China next year. And he's telling his story. And I asked them, I said, how was it in Beijing? You know, like, you spent 4 years in a non-Christian environment. Like, how did that impact your faith? And, like, I was astounded by his answer. I mean, his faith is stronger today than when he went. He didn't lose his faith. It didn't weaken him. He couldn't fellowship because you weren't allowed. He said, if you got caught doing any of those things, you were sent back. So he said, I wasn't, you know, going to risk my future. But now he's, you know, he's challenging his Christian friends in Zambia, you know, because he sees their faith is weak, you know, and he's challenging them on their work ethic. You know, he says, I'm in the office till 10 at night. He says, I work hard. He said, this wasn't given to me a silver platter. He says, I've had to work for this. So he's making a difference. We can go to the next slide. So as we saw in the account of the demon-possessed man in the book of Mark, story is a powerful thing. It's even more powerful when it's told by a transformed life. The next slide, you'll meet Pamela. Pamela and her brother Daniel grew up at Village Hope, Zimbabwe. Both of them have graduated from university now. And Pamela talks a lot about her self-image. She said, my image of myself improved, and I even decided to join the praise and worship team. You know, there was a time when she would not stand up in public. Just the shame that she carried. I like her brother. He says, the Village of Hope made my education available. They gave me a place to call home, a place I would always feel comfortable and run free. Through the Village of Hope, I've become a better person in character and personality. It has equipped me with life skills, and I know I will always lean on the Village should I need a scratch. I like that, you know. And a lot of these kids, they do. They see the Village, whichever village they came out of, they see that as their family, as their home, as their connecting point. They are no longer abandoned. They're no longer neglected. They are no longer defined by what was done to them. They are now defined by how God sees them and how God views them and how we see them. You have no idea the impact you have on these kids, especially the ones that you're sponsoring. That people from here would send money over so that they would be well cared for and loved. That has a huge impact. That they know that there's God's people on the other side of the world that are giving them a second thought. And that's transforming. It's a big thing. It might be a small thing on this side, but to them on that side, it's a big thing. In Mwaka, she talks about how her life has completely changed. She says, I will never forget the things that Village of Hope has done in my life. In a nutshell, Village of Hope is a place of freedom, peace, and love. Those are her own words. Chanda says, I thank God for everything. Everything I have. And I know what Chanda is saying because I know her. And she's not just talking about food and clothing. She's talking about the peace in her soul. Her life has been transformed. And recently we've started working in four new communities. We can go to the... Yeah, Bulale, Tanzania. Very poor community outside of the city of Mwanza. We just got these brand new little kids just coming in. Muramvya in Burundi, the next slide. And you can see how quickly smiles come. These kids probably, you know, when this picture was taken, they were probably... you know, 6-7 months at the village, you know. But you can see how quickly. That's what I love about working with children. You know, the results come very fast. You know, the smiles come, the giggling, you know, even the naughtiness, you know. I always laugh when the village directors tell me about the challenges they have at their villages and the kids this and the kids that. And I just smile and I just say, yeah, that's good, isn't it? That just tells me everything's okay. Seriously, like if a kid is just huddled in the corner with their, that's not good. A kid should be out there getting in trouble. You know, so those smiles, they come really quick, you know. In Kaoma in Malawi, it's a new community, you can see it in the, yeah. That's a great thing for kids to do, eh? Get into a circle and play. Sing, dance. Yeah. And I know the community those kids come from. I've spent some time in Kaoma area, gotten to understand the culture there. I know where they're coming from. What a wonderful thing to be able to escape that each and every day, to come to the village there and to stand in a circle and eat a cookie and hold hands and sing songs and learn how to write your name. Small things to us, almost insignificant things to us, but to them, wow, their world has changed. So by our interventions, I really do believe we are reducing the negative impact of childhood trauma, giving each child a chance for a healthy transition into adulthood. And like the man from the Gerasenes that Jesus delivered, the children of Village of Hope now have a story to tell of that intersection between their past and God's love and God's mercy. And many of the ones that have grown up and have transitioned out are doing that very thing. They're going out and telling their stories. And these stories are our stories. They're not my stories. Couldn't have done this without partners like Highway Christian Fellowship. Couldn't have done it without people who were willing to sponsor the children. And you've sent teams, you've helped us build buildings, and it's all ripened into beautiful fruits. And it's bringing glory to God's name and to his kingdom. And thank you for that. You are appreciated. You are loved by both Nancy and I. God bless you.